and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Neil Shulman. He's actually here in Atlanta with me. And we're going to talk about, a little bit about his new book, Your Body's Red Light Warning Signals. But most of it we're going to save till next week. Tonight he's going to entertain us with humor. How can we feel better with humor? How are you, Dr. Shulman?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for coming on my show tonight.
I'm delighted. I'm honored. I'm pleased. I'm happy.
Thank you. So before we get started, tell us a little bit about you, where people can find your books, because you've written more than one, and a little bit about what you do and your book and the conference that you're going to be doing in a couple of weeks.
I don't know if people want to find me.
Of course they do. Everybody wants to find you, especially when they find out how funny you are and what you can do to make them feel better.
Oh, okay. I'm findable. There's something called the Internet, and under my name, Neil, N-E-I-L, Shulman, S-H-U-L-M-A-N, .com, N-E-I-L-S-H-U-L-M-A-N, .com. And that's the easiest way to find me. So I look forward to hearing from you. In the meantime, who I am is I'm somebody who started off as a doctor and accidentally got into entertainment. So I went to medical school, and then the most popular book I wrote was called Doc Hollywood with a friend, and the book named Carl Hyacin, by the way, who's a very famous novelist. And the book was made into a movie with a nice guy named Michael J. Fox, who in the movie is on his way out west to be a rich plastic surgeon, and his car breaks down in a small little town, and he falls in love with a girl, and instead of being a rich plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills, is a country doctor in Grady, South Carolina. And then there are about 23 other books. They're kids' books. I do spots on public TV called What's in a Doctor's Bag? So kids are not afraid of doctors. The instruments all turn into creatures. Otis the Otoscope, Lubba-Dubba, and Miss Knee-Knocker. And then we've done a bunch of other kids' books. We have a new book that will be coming out shortly called The Corporate Kid. That's about a low-income kid who turns around the CEO of a big hospital corporation. And this kid has very high ethics, and the CEO doesn't, and the kid teaches the CEO the importance of being ethical. And then we have some health books. And there's one, The Real Truth About Aging, with two geriatricians that gets down to the nuts and bolts of what might be helpful for folks. And we did a book called Your Body's Red Light Warning Signals. And that's just an $8 book that tells you what are the most important symptoms in the opinion of 150 doctors in all specialties of medicine. And we organize them all from head to toe for kids, adults, and pregnant women, so people can hopefully instantly find out if their symptom might be one that is sort of like a 911 symptom. And after the movie Doc Hollywood came out, I got an opportunity to connect with Patch Adams and became president of his organization for a while, and then did start doing a lot of comedy to demystify medicine and help people hopefully be happier. I think humor is very, very good medicine.
I hope you're going to give us a taste of that tonight.
What taste do you like?
Well,
orange,
since I
yellow.
Haven't heard any of it, I'd like samples of as much as you can give me.
As much humor as possible.
That's not something that people hear a lot of nowadays, you know? Everybody's worried about keeping their job, keeping their house, keeping their children safe, and nobody laughs anymore.
Yeah, you're right. I know the feeling. It is stressful these days, but the way I got into humor in the first place is when I was a little kid, I was a total klutz. I mean, you know, I'd be dancing and I'd step on little girls' toes, and I'd throw a ball, baseball, and it would go in the opposite direction. And I'd be at a party, and I'd be eating, and I'd try to put some food in my mouth and miss my mouth. And all the kids around laughed at me, and I felt very self-conscious. But then it just dawned on me one day that whether they're laughing at me or with me, it makes no difference. The key thing is that I was making them laugh. And actually, if they were laughing at me, it might even be better, because I'd rather have humor where I'm not making fun of somebody else, but making fun of myself. That's very safe humor. I think there's all kinds of humor. By the way, I might say one thing that's very, 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 very important. And because of my being a klutz, I have saved more lives than any doctor in America by not being a surgeon.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, I have a friend who's a malpractice lawyer, and he begged me to go into surgery and said he'd split whatever he made suing me and that I'd be a billionaire by now. When I graduated from medical school, the dean of the medical school made me sign an agreement that I would never cut a piece of meat within 100 yards of a human being.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's on the back of my diploma, my medical school diploma.
That's
so, but I will say that I think there's lots and lots of ways you can get humor in your life, you know, and humor has been proven to really do a lot of things to your body with hormones and the physiology of how your heart and lung function and all that stuff, so that it makes it healthier, makes your body healthier. So one way to get a lot of humor in your life is to hang around members of the PPC.
What is that?
That's the Puberty Prevention Club.
I don't know.
We wrote a book,
that club is.
Life Before Sex, about some kids who didn't want to go through puberty. And they formed the Puberty Prevention Club, and their grandmother joined because she believed that before puberty, everybody has a good time because they don't know any better. And after menopause, they all have a good time because they don't care anymore. So I found that you know, if you hang around members of the PPC, you really can laugh a lot. I'll give you some examples. A friend of mine has a five-year-old daughter, and she works in a hospital, and her five-year-old daughter every day would ask her, "Mama, Mama, I want to meet your big boss. Mama, Mama, I want to meet your big boss. Mama, Mama, I want to meet your big boss." So one day she said, "Okay." So she called the CEO's office of the hospital. And the secretary said, "Bring your little daughter over. They're having a board meeting. They'll be glad to meet her." Little girl walks into the room. They're all around this mahogany table. She looks around the room, sees all these board members, the CEO of the hospital, and she says, "Mama, Mama, where are the clowns? You said you work for a bunch of clowns." She's not working there anymore.
That's funny.
And then I was walking down the aisle of Home Depot once with my niece, and she says, "I've got to go potty." She's six. And I said, "Well, I just have to buy this wrench. It will take a minute." And I turned around, and she was sitting on one of the potties they were selling at Home Depot. I bought it. At the other end of the spectrum are seniors. I had a little patient. I was medical director of a nursing home. And this lady, she was, 95 years old, and I thought she might have a little stroke. I said, "Ma'am, would you mind smiling and showing me your teeth?" She smiled and gave me her teeth. And then I walked in a room where this 96-year-old man was having a love affair with a 94-year-old woman, and they weren't married. And I immediately walked out of the room. I apologized to the lady afterwards, but I told her as a healthcare professional, "I must say it's okay for you to have sex, you're old enough, but make sure it's safe sex." And this 94-year-old woman said, "I always have safe sex. I always put a pillow by the bedboard so I won't bump my head."
Is this true?
Yes. She does do that. And this is advice I'd give to anybody. This woman was a very wise woman.
I didn't know people 94 still had sex.
Well, she called it something else. I forgot what it was.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something funny. I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but it's my show, so I can do it. I had a little boy. My oldest boy is 26. He's in the Army right now. And when he was about, 10 or 11, he was standing in my office one day, and I had a dictaphone sitting on my desk. And he picked it up, and he looked at it, and he said, and I hope I don't offend you, but it cracked me up. I couldn't help it.
I hope what?
I hope I don't offend you or my listeners, but this is a true story, and it's funny, so I can't help it. I got to do it. Since you brought the sex topic up. And he picked up my dictaphone, and he looked at it, and he said, "Mom, what is this, a dick detector?" And I said, "That's exactly what it is. Now go tell your father that I have one." I think that's a funny story, and it's true. It really happened.
Yeah, the true stuff is some of the most funny. I think also, you know, you can even use humor when you're upset, and it can lift you up. You know, for instance, one of the things that really, really pisses me off is these calls I get from telemarketers, and particularly around dinner time. And, you know, they call on your cell phone, they call on your regular phone. So the last time I got a call, I decided, you know, I wasn't going to be nasty at these people. They got to make a living. So I was just going to take my name out of the phone book and out of the directory and put my dog's name in the phone book, Holly. So So then American Express calls. We have a special deal. Is Holly in? I said, I'm sorry. Holly's not available at the moment. She's in the backyard peeing on a tree. Got a call from MasterCard. The woman said, I spoke to Holly last week. I know she's there.
Did she really?
Is that true? Yeah, I said, I'm sorry, she's chewing on a bone. But the ultimate came from a Georgia Baptist Hospital in Atlanta at that time, man, at Georgia Baptist Hospital, and they said, they sent Holly a coupon in the mail. Holly had won a free mammogram. I called Georgia Baptist, asked for mammography, and asked if they do all 12 of her breasts.
And their reply was?
Well, two at a time. We had to bring her in six times.
I have a solution for your telemarketing calls, by the way. You have a four-year-old, right?
Yep.
So
he's coming out of diapers. I'm going into diapers. He's four. I'm 65.
When my little boy was little and the telemarketers would call and ask for my husband's name, I'd say, hold on just a moment, please. And I'd hand the phone to my four-year-old. And he would talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And finally they would just hang up when they figured out 30 minutes later he was never coming to the phone. It works. It works.
Very good idea.
So I'm looking at your website right now, and I see another kind of movie with Michael J. Fox. Wait a minute, I've lost the page. Is there The Witch Doctor? What is that?
Oh, this is a book that Disney had me write a screenplay on. And now it's getting a lot of traction, actually. Disney didn't make it. And now there's a lot of traction for it being made from another group. And it's about a doctor who goes on a flying doctor mission to Kenya. And he comes across this little girl in Africa who needs heart surgery and wants to bring her back to the United States. And her parents say, no way. And he says, well, here's my American Express card. The family can come, too. So the doctor comes back to Atlanta, gets everything ready for surgery, goes out to the Atlanta airport to meet the little girl. She gets off the plane, and the whole tribe does. They charge the entire tribe's trip to the doctor's American Express card. They set up their village in the doctor's backyard. The witch doctor, the Laban, goes to all the local hospitals in Atlanta and starts treating people, and they all get better.
So with your humor, have you had really sick patients that's gotten well? Do you teach this to them?
Well, I have done humor, like with patients with cancer, with seniors, with Alzheimer's patients. And even kids, you know, and I have never done any studies to document. There have been lots of studies done where they look at effects of humor, but I haven't done any myself with my humor. I know that, you know, afterwards they seem upbeat and positive, and I hope that I'm having impact. And as I say, there's a lot of evidence that there's a lot of positive spinoffs of that. But I haven't studied my own humor. When I get up in the morning and look at myself in the mirror, I laugh a lot.
I bet your patients love to see you come in the room.
Well, it depends. Depends. Patients definitely like to see me leave the room.
So you told me earlier that you're not practicing. What are you doing now?
Right. I'm teaching now and writing and speaking. And remember, I do get involved in healthcare for patients who can't get healthcare and try to help them in different situations. And, you know, that I just voluntarily get involved in. And that spun off to this global health and humanitarian summit that we're having April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd that's all free.
Tell us about that, please.
Well, it's at the website www.imvc.org, like International M Mary V Victor C dot org, IMVC.org. And at that website, one can learn about what we did with 1,500 people last year from all over the world and what we're doing this year, starting April Fool's Day in Atlanta at Emory University, where we will try to compete with the Global Economic Summit in Switzerland by having a Global Humanitarian Summit. And that means basically that we're just getting people together from all religions, all political parties, all economic strata who just want to help make everybody on Earth, all 6.8 billion of us, have a long, healthy, happy life. And people just on an individual basis go out and do stuff to do that and try to have people have a peaceful life and folks have enough food and housing and place to stay.
And I'm looking at this right now and I see that it has a place for volunteers. What, this is a great thing. I didn't know about this till you just told me. What can someone do to volunteer? And is it only local or is it something someone can do from other parts of the world?
Well, we partner with an organization called medicalmissions.org. And they, for free, as a matter of fact, if you send them money, they won't take it. If you say, will you make my plane reservation and get commission, they won't do it. They're totally free, and what they do is they connect people up with medical types of missions, but they don't have to be doctors. All over the world, they've connected up 13,000 people in the United States and abroad in all walks of life. There's also a journal, Medical Volunteerism Journal, that's come out, and that's free at the internet, and you can Google Medical Volunteerism Journal, and that was a spinoff by one of the attendees at the conference, a doctor who graduated from Harvard named Charles Moore, who started this journal. But it's not all medical. I mean, it's clean water, it's housing, poverty. We don't mind if people have corporate jets and big yachts, and some other people take the bus. But we think everybody should have food, shelter, peace, and health.
That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, there was a guy who spent all his life doing medical missions in Africa. And he was teaching kids, well, teenagers, to do C-sections in Ethiopia, where there was no doctor around, so they didn't have to crush the baby's head to save the mother's life.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing.
I mean, they're just wonderful, wonderful people. And as I say, they're from all walks of life. And we don't want this to just be a conference, and it's a free event.
When is the
And we've got about total exhibitors plus nonprofits plus attendees, that is, speaker attendees. The speakers plus the exhibitors are already about well, way over 200, maybe 250. So it's like a festival, and you go from one event to another. There will be many going on at the same time in all areas of humanitarian work for people to connect with each other, to be inspired to do this work, to be more, you know, like somebody figures out how to do something really well in one part of the world, and then they, other people catch on and learn about it, and they start doing that thing in another part of the world. And we want to give a voice to people who feel as though this should be the first priority. The first priority in life should be to make a difference in one way or another, so us humans can live up to the word humanitarian. I think sometimes birds are more humanitarian than humans. Birds don't invent bombs. Birds don't. If a bird leaves their nest and goes 300 miles away, a homeless bird can come and live in their nest. I don't think humans always do that. So we need to learn, and from the rest of the animal kingdom, and you know, behave ourselves so each of us can live as long and healthy a dash. I mean, we all already won the lottery. It takes 200 and, well, I'd say it takes 50 million sperms to fertilize an egg. And we're all winning sperms. So we won the lottery. We should all live a long, healthy dash and help others live a long, healthy dash. And peaceful and, you know,
some
joyous
kind of quality of life, yeah.
I just want people to live joyous, and we find that, you know, people who see this as a priority. By the way, it only takes 5 eggs, but it takes 50 million sperms. You know why?
No.
Sperms will not ask directions.
Because they're male. That's right.
Yes. Can't get a sperm to ask directions.
Well, I want to say this. I'm looking on the site, and it says the next festival is April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Is that right?
Starts, yep, April Fool's Day, and it's all free.
And where is it?
It's in Atlanta at Emory University. And when you go to the website, it has all the detailed directions and the time it starts, Friday evening. There's a big humanitarian musical and dance, and people from Patch Adams' organization and clowns are coming, and there are singers and celebrating humanity. And then the next day, everybody meets all these wonderful speakers and exhibitors, and then they just roam around and learn about all these joyous humanitarian efforts and connect with each other. And last year, we had a student from China who went back and started the first free clinic started by students in China.
That's fabulous. Well, I'm going to be there. I'm going to volunteer, I think. It says that there's a volunteer. What can I do? I'm going to call you later so you can tell me what to do.
Sure.
If you need a volunteer.
Yeah, we can always have people. It's all free, so the way we make it free is people volunteer and each help each other, just like what they do out in the world. That would be wonderful.
Can you tell us about the One Path Summit? What's coming up with that?
The One Path Summit?
Mm-hmm.
You mean the integrative medicine?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm honored to have been invited to speak there. And it's a another event taking place in Atlanta, Georgia, and the you can go to onepathsummit.com, and they're doctors creating the future of healthcare. And Suzanne Summers is the keynote speaker. And and there are lots of other speakers. There's Harry Doucher, who's an endocrinologist, and there's Nicholas Gonzalez, who's a nutrition oncologist, a cancer doctor who focuses on nutrition. Mark Houston, who's director of a big high blood pressure institute at St. Thomas Hospital, and an AIDS sports medicine specialist.
Bless you.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sneezing so much.
Third time's a charm, so maybe that'll get rid of it for you. I can tell you're suffering. I said third time's a charm, so maybe that'll be your last one. I can tell you're suffering. You're stuffed up. I'm sorry.
But there's also a cardiologist and professor of medicine at Duke, Michael Krutkoff, and family physician and innovator. Excuse me. Wow. I think I'm being invaded. A family physician and innovator in patient-centered care, Pamela Wibble. So we're all joining together, and I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be March 6th and 26th and 27th in Atlanta, Georgia.
All of these people are taking a step. I'm asking a question, not making a statement. They're taking a step beyond regular allopathic medicine and what they're talking about. Is that right?
Yeah, they just think we all should be focused on one thing. Not saying we're a better doctor than another doctor. That, we all, our number one goal is to get people healthy. And there are traditional things you can do in traditional medicine, and there are things that aren't in traditional medicine. One of the problems, the big giant problem in the world in reference to medicine is that if you discover a drug that you can patent, then you can make a lot of money off of it, and you can market it to doctors and everybody, and sometimes those drugs are very valuable. But on the other hand, when you come up with something that you can't patent, that might be nutritional or related to alternative approaches, then marketing that and getting the word out, there's not a lot of resources to do it. And there's not a lot of resources always to study it as much as you'd like. And therefore, it might be very effective. I mean, there are doctors who are, native doctors in developing countries who've passed down things that work for generations and generations and generations, and nobody's ever studied it completely, but every time they do it, it seems to work. So I think that money shouldn't be the only driving force to letting people know what is out there. It should be what works. Just because you can't make money off of doing it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And we see sometimes people get unnecessary surgeries that, they might have back surgery when they don't really need back surgery. That's not good. Sometimes they need it, but sometimes they don't, and sometimes they're worse off when they have it. And sometimes they're worse off taking certain drugs or combinations of drugs, and the drug itself causes serious problems. Now, sometimes... Yep. I mean, if you have an appendix and it bursts, you need your appendix taken out, and that's real important. You don't want massage on your back if your appendix is going to burst in your belly.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't necessarily want your back operated on if somebody can manipulate your back and make it a lot better, depending on what the problem is.
I want to share something with you now that you're talking about this. I have a group of friends who we had a think tank several years ago down in Miami, and something was put together called the humanhealthproject.org. And I hadn't looked at it in a while. I was on the steering committee for a while, but I hadn't looked at it in quite a while, so I don't know where it stands right now. But the goal of that project, and I do know it's up and running, I just don't know how well yet, was to, it's kind of like the Human Genome Problem project. Their original goal was to take every single disease known to mankind that they could document and put it in this database, and then take every single treatment modality that they knew about in the world that could treat this particular problem, and put them in, the, including alternative medicine resources, all the way down to allopathic resources, and put them in taxonomy so that somebody could go to this site and look at it and see what all things would help this disease and in what order was the effectiveness of this, of whatever treatment it was. So that's something that maybe these people could connect up with somehow, because it's free, last time I looked.
And what's the website?
It's humanhealthproject.org. A man named Martin Vu kind of started heading it up. He did work for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals as one of their senior researchers. And then he left there and went to be the CEO of the National Foundation of Alternative Medicine. And now he's just doing research on nutritional supplements and things.
And it's humanhealthproject.org.
I think
health.
Phil Harrington's running it now.
Wow, that's
a great resource. I mean, I haven't looked
valuable.
At it in a while. Yeah, it could be great. And people can put in their experiences with a certain thing, so you can kind of get feedback from other patients and physicians and alternative health workers, all in this one spot. So that would
HumanHealthProject.org.
Yes.
Wow, that's wonderful.
I don't know how far it's gone, though. It's been a long time since I looked at it, since it got up and running. But
yeah. Well, you know, of course, you always want to make sure, or hopefully there's evidence that things work, and you want to make sure you don't do any harm.
That's right.
And the less invasive, the better. But sometimes you got to be invasive, and if you're not invasive, you know, if you have meningitis and you're a little baby in India, you need to have antibiotics if it's a bacterial infection. And when a doctor who went from India to Johns Hopkins, where he trained, and came back to his small little town and taught the local people how to recognize and treat these infections in the sac that the brain sits in for little kids, he was able to reduce death in neonates, little babies, by 50% and greater.
Really?
Yep. And that was published in Lancet, major medical journal. And, you know, that was the traditional way, but, you know, you needed that. But then there are people who need to go on gluten-free diets.
Yeah.
And they could have all sorts of drugs and everything else, but if they went on a gluten-free diet, it would help dramatically with some of their
I could
illnesses.
Go off all night long when it starts coming to nutrition and supplements and genetically modified foods, corn in specific. But I want to know about who knows. What is that?
Who knows? That is a movie I co-directed and co-starred in. and it's WHONOSE. I think it's on Netflix, and it's a movie about an old man looking for a wife. And I played the old man looking for the wife because I'd never been married. And in the movie, this character is talking to a psychiatrist, and he tells his psychiatrist that he's just going to marry the next woman he comes across. And he's driving down the street. He sees this woman on a bike. He stops, and he tells her he's going to put her in a movie if she's willing to be in a movie. And she says, sure. And in the movie, he is an old man looking for a wife who puts a woman in a movie where she's chasing him as a gold digger. And then he ends up marrying her. And after I made the movie with this woman, we got married. And now we have a four-year-old child.
You've got a four-year-old child.
So it's a movie within a movie within real life.
So how is it for your wife to deal with so much humor? My boyfriend does humor things too, and we'll be sitting and having a very serious conversation about something about like quantum mechanics and human consciousness, and all of a sudden he'll jump up from the table and goes, "Look, here's my moose impression of Eva." And everybody, we don't know how to deal with that sometimes. How does your wife deal with humor?
She has a good sense of humor, and my son has a really great sense of humor. He's great. And we have a tickle machine that he has learned how to use.
What is it? What is that?
It's his hands when he tickles me.
Oh. We have one of those in my house, too. And man, yeah. Does my little boy go crazy when they're used on him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really, really great tickle machines. But even the, you know, some of the funniest stuff is what just really happens in life, you know. I remember my first delivery of a baby. I was really, really nervous, and I was sitting in the hallway of the hospital on the floor trying to memorize the directions for delivering a baby because I didn't want to hold the book and read it at the same time I was delivering. And I was trying to memorize these directions, and a stretcher comes down the hallway, and there's a baby on the stretcher. Well, the baby's not on the stretcher. There's a woman on the stretcher, but the baby's head is coming out. And the nurses are yelling, "You better catch this baby, otherwise we'll catch the baby. You won't get credit, and you won't go on to dermatology." So I said, "Roll her into the operating room." So they rolled her into the operating room. I said, "I'm going to run in, wash up, put on the baggy green pants and shirt so I'll be nice and sterile, and I'll be right there." And I looked in the other room, and the baby's hand is out. I once saw a baby whose hand came out holding an IUD in its hand, and it had the victory symbol on the other hand. It's a little Catholic baby. But this little baby, his hand came out, and he was motioning for me to come quickly to him. So I ran over. I bent down to catch the baby, and the nurses said, "Catch it." I said, "I am." They said, "Not the baby, your pants." This was the biggest decision I had to make in medicine. Do I catch my pants, these baggy green pants that were surgical pants and that were fallen, or the baby? Well, I caught the baby. I lost my pants. And the three nurses staring at me said, "Oh, look, it's a little boy."
Oh, I bet you were a hoot to work with.
Well, we hooted a lot.
I've worked in the OR before, and most of them don't have big sense of humor. Big egos, but very rarely big sense of humor. That would be a wonderful thing.
Humor is very, very good for the body. I just am a real strong advocate of humor. But as I say, it's the true stuff. I remember my first psychiatric exam in medical school. I was really nervous. And I was in this little room where the professors could see you through a one-way mirror, but you couldn't see them. And this woman I'm supposed to interview. And she was depressed. I once had a patient who was depressed and having hot flashes, and I asked her, I said, have you been through the menopause? She said, I don't think so, but I...
But you have so many things going on, and I see something else that attracted my attention. The solo accords, what is that?
Solo.
A solo. I guess, A-S-O-L-O.
Oh, Aslo accord.
Aslo, okay, sorry.
Yeah, this is a book that's about God intervening in Israel and Palestine. That's at our website, neilshulman.com.
I'm looking at it now.
And God intervenes in Israel and Palestine, and he puts a gene in the head of Hamas, so he loves all the Jews. And he puts a gene in the head of Knesset, so he loves all the Palestinians. And everybody around them think they have gone crazy. So they call in the Center for Disease Control. And they think it is an empathy virus. And they're afraid it's going to spread to Ireland and the Catholics will start loving the Protestants.
So is this comedy or is this not? Because that's really funny.
It's sort of a mix.
Actually, kind of scary, but
yeah, it has a serious element to it. But it's we really wish there can be an empathy virus in the world, and we need that, and we also need a spray for greed. You know, when people are real greedy, you know, like somebody dies in the family and everybody's fighting over stuff and you spray this in the air and everybody says, well, you take it. You take it.
I think there needs to be one for materialism, too.
Yep.
I can't stand it. I mean, I literally, you know, one of the things, let me see how much time we have. One of the things that I see going on right now in my neighborhood is a, through the teenagers that my daughter knows, a lot of their families, you know, they live in these big houses and they drive these fancy cars and their the girls have to have American Eagle. That's the only one I can think of. That's why I'm using that one right now. But whatever it is, the designer clothes is. And they're all living on the edge of their credit cards. So something happens to the job and they have, all of a sudden, someone, these teenagers' lives are radically changed, you know, and it's causes profound depression and marriages to break up and kids to be suicidal and start using drugs where if they live frugally, and I do this thing, I try to live very frugally because I can't stand waste and I can't stand greed and I can't stand materialism. So if you live a simple life, when the thing's bad, when it crashes, you don't suffer as much because you're okay.
You're right. I totally agree with that.
And when my kids talk about that, I say, look at everybody around you. Everybody's crashing, and we're okay because we live as simply as we can, and we're okay.
Yeah, I have real old cars, and they have bumps and scrapes on them and all sorts of things. And when I go downtown in Atlanta and a homeless person comes up and cleans my windshield, they give me a dollar.
Exactly. Well, I don't have a new car either. I drive like a 2006 Camry. And I love it. I love it. And before that, I drove a Volvo that was 11 years old, you know. I don't have any debt, you know, and I don't have to fret like, my children's lives didn't fall apart, you know, when the economy fell down. And I think it's something important to teach our children, and well, teach our adults right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
And we got, let's see how many minutes. It's 8:53. We got about 5 minutes. Do you really live in a house where the roof draws back?
Well, I have one in my backyard. It's a convertible log cabin.
I wanna rent that out and live there for a week.
Well, it's broken right now, but you're more than welcome to the roof is on. But it's actually a cabin where the deck has these a frame on it, and the roof could roll over the frame onto the deck, and then you take your roof off, and you'd look up in the sky, and it's just nice and clear. And
I can't think of anything better than living in a cabin in the woods where the roof would come off.
Yeah, it's very pleasant.
Really nice.
I've had another traumatic experience. My house is on a hill, and the 20-foot foundation wall that was holding up the back of my house collapsed once at 2 in the morning, and my whole house tilted, and the glass broke in the windows. I went to my neighbor's house and said, "Did you see my house built?" And they said, "Yeah, we were betting on when it would fall down." What they did was there was this big hole, and they cut down 20 feet of pine trees, and they put them in the hole and put a little dirt on top and built house over the hole. And 8 years later, all those trees rotted.
That's unbelievable.
It collapsed. So CNN did a story on my house that collapsed once. It's very exciting.
That's amazing.
House on CNN.
Everybody okay, though?
Yeah, my dog had a little psychological problem.
Yeah, I'd probably have a psychological problem from that. All right, you got a couple of minutes. What can you tell us in a couple of minutes? Anything you have to say, something funny, something important?
Well, to your 6.8 billion listeners, because that's the number of humans on Earth.
Thank you.
I want to say to all of you guys who've won the lottery because you're a winning sperm, that just go out there and really enjoy it. No matter what religion you are, no matter what race, no matter what country you're from, we're all just human beings. And I really, really, really hope that even if you don't come to our free global humanitarian summit, that's at www.imvc.org, M like Mary, V as in Victor, IMVC.org. Even if you don't go, that you just learn about all these wonderful things these people are doing and connect with them and just take this human spirit and laugh your way through your dash and don't get down. Stay up and be creative, be funny, and be a friend. All your neighbors.
And I have to say, I promised a lady at One Path Summit that I would promote their conference since they hooked you and I up. Please take a look at onepathsummit.org and support this conference on integrative medicine.
Dr. Absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely want to say it's going to be a great summit. And all you have to do is go to One Path Summit, onepathsummit.com. And it's in Atlanta March 26th and March 27th.
At the Cobb Cowling Galleria, right, at that conference center there, I think. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Shulman, for taking the time to come on my show. I hope you feel better. Take lots of vitamin C. And I will see you next weekend.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health. Consciousness and health.
Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.